Come to order. If you're able, I invite you to stand and join in the Pledge of Allegiance. Pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America, for which it stands.
Please call the roll.
Mr. McDavid?
Here.
Mr. Schmidt?
Here.
Mr. Trapp?
Here.
Mr. Kessel?
Here.
Mr. Dudley?
Here.
Ms. Anthony?
Here.
Ms. Hoppe?
Here.
We have minutes from the regular council meeting of July 16, 2012. If there are no corrections, may I have a motion and a second for approval?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. Are there any corrections, extractions to the agenda, including the consent agenda?
I have two, and I apologize for not mentioning it to the mayor. I wanted to do it earlier. I'd like to remove Bill 187 and Bill 207 from the introduction and first read, to have it on the following August 20th meeting for two reasons. I think those are controversial issues that we should hear when people are back from the summer.
Which
and
ones?
It's one's on stormwater, and the other one is on the rental occupancy. And I've been getting a lot of emails on the rental occupancy. And then my second reason is that I will not be here August 20th, and I'd like to have an opportunity to weigh in and have input on those two. So then,
does it need a second?
It would be introduced the following August 20th.
Does staff any issues with the storm, with moving it back a couple weeks?
No. That's fine.
So the motion is to remove those two issues from
this
first
agenda.
Read and to put it on the first read at the next meeting.
Right.
My understanding on that rental unit one is that it's part of the budget, so it's going to be second read, but it's going to be held over until you guys approve the budget. So it's up to you whether you want to remove it, but it's part of that whole budget packet, and all those items are going to be held over for three meetings. So you might want to go ahead with that one in with all the other budgets.
You have a second, right?
Because it's not being voted on.
Yeah, I did second it the way it stands.
I have a motion and a second to.
Yeah, both of them.
Both of them.
Yeah.
Any discussion on removing these from first read, placing them on the first read at the next meeting? That's the motion, is that correct?
Right.
All right. Any discussion?
So moving the matter that's part of the budget package, if we move it back, it won't?
No, it'll
okay.
still be voted on as part of the second meeting in September.
Yep.
Okay.
All in favor of the motion to amend the consent, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. If there are no other corrections to the agenda, may I have a motion and a second for approval as amended?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. Welcome to the meeting. We have several opportunities for public comment during the meeting, during the public hearings, old business, new business, and we do have an open comment section at the end of the meeting. Yeah, each individual is entitled to 3 minutes. If you represent an organization or group, you'll be entitled to 5 minutes, and your time will be by my iPhone will tell you when your time is up. We offer a scheduled public comment section, and those who have contacted the city manager's office by noon on the Wednesday prior to a council meeting can speak at the beginning of the meeting on any topic not on the agenda. Only two people can speak on the same topic. Tonight we have two requests to speak. Council does not address these issues brought up under scheduled public comments at the time the comments are made, but council might elect to discuss these at the end of the meeting during the council comments section. Each individual is entitled 5 minutes. I'll yield 5 minutes to Mary Hussman.
My name's Mary Hussman. I live at 5306 Rice Road in Columbia. I'm speaking on behalf of GROW Grassroots Organizing. When asked what people should be doing, the Dalai Lama advised critical thinking followed by action. That is what proposals that come before you require, critical thinking followed by action. You've already taken some steps to take action to enact the state blight EEZ program, but Columbians are not convinced that you've done the necessary critical thinking. Tonight I'm presenting you a petition that reads, "We the citizens of Columbia, Missouri, insist that the City Council prevent any part of the City of Columbia to be declared blighted to qualify Columbia for an enhanced enterprise zone, EEZ." And yes, just in case you're wondering, we didn't start this petition right away. We did take the time to learn about, contemplate the issue, and then felt compelled to take action. Over 1,000 Columbians signed this petition. These are not for an official ballot, but rather they're official Columbians asking to be heard. GROW Grassroots Organizing collected these one by one, in person, not by a website, which I'm sure could have yielded many thousands more. The reasons GROW collected these signatures on street corners, in public places, and in doorways is because we wanted to hear people's comments, their thoughts, their feelings, why they signed the petition. Let me share with you just a few examples of what I and our volunteers heard. Outside the farmer's market, a man who just recently moved to Columbia burst out laughing. "You're kidding. They think Columbia has blight? I've been exploring all over the city. I just don't see how your council could say that. I've lived in dozens of cities and seen blight, but to do that here is crazy," he signed. Outside our public library, a woman before she signed said, "I know we need jobs, but this just doesn't seem like the right way to go about it." At the downtown post office, a young man said, "I'll sign. This seems like way too few jobs to give so much money to. Who'll get these jobs anyway?" During our door-to-door petitioning, a woman told us, "No, I don't want to be in the blight zone. Where's it going to be? I'll be mad if they say it's where I live." She signed and then added, "Actually, I think I'll be mad if they put blight zones anywhere in Columbia." Blight designation is fundamentally flawed because those lines the state mandates you approve are artificial and divisive. Blight labeling in Columbia would not only be untrue, unfair, and permanent, but would result in demeaning our community reputation and our neighbors. I believe the majority of the residents are against these phantom human-made designations. Imagine if this issue was on a ballot. Wouldn't it take a massive prejudicial propaganda campaign for you to get people to vote against each other to prevent their families from being included in a blight zone? I believe you would need the phenomena called NIMBY, not interested in my property being a blight yard. Okay, put it somewhere, just not by me. In addition, EEZs force every taxpayer to invest in the costs of private corporations when there's no hard evidence that EEZs work. But there is evidence that they don't work. And the first step toward Columbia EEZs is the little white lie of blight. The Dalai Lama also said, "If you think you're too small to make a difference, try sleeping with a mosquito." So tonight, for your bedtime contemplation, I present to you these aroused, irritated, pesky mosquitoes buzzing in your ear, no, no, 1,000 times, no. They firmly but respectfully asked you, Mayor David, and our council persons, Schmidt, Trapp, Kespel, Dudley, Anthony, and Hoppe, take the critical and contemplative approach that the people ask of you. Following this, let your actions be to dissolve the EEZ board and send this short message to Jefferson City. The blight EEZ program does not fit our needs. Columbia says no to blight EEZ.
Thank you, Ms. Hussman. I'll now yield 5 minutes to Justin Thomas.
Justin Thomas, 202 West Sexton Road, and I'm going to use the presentation here a little bit briefly. I can share this address with you in an email so that you can get a copy of the, well, what I'm calling a report on the Douglas Park forums that have taken place in 2012. So just a little bit of background on me, where I'm coming from here. I moved to Columbia and I bought my house, 202 West Sexton, in September of 2007. So I'm a graduate student. I have a Master's of Arts in Sustainable Development, and I'm preparing to end a year of leave from the Rural Sociology Program at the University of Missouri. I'm a PhD candidate there. So I study development generally, political decentralization, integrated community development, participatory action research, and ethnography. And I've served as a secretary of the Douglas Park Neighborhood Association since October 2011 until this August. And so this report comes out of a lot of that experience. And I don't know if anybody remembers, but in January, the first forum was held in the Douglas High School cafeteria. And a lot of it was in response to the closing of the Douglas Park parking lot gate. And there were about maybe 60 people there in the cafeteria. It was an open forum. People were free to make comments. Everyone's thoughts, concerns were respected. And what I did, I recorded that forum and then the subsequent forum that took place in April, where there were discussion groups and the conversation was focused around three different questions. And so I took those recordings and I transcribed them in the report that you have here, and what I'm going to summarize for you quickly. And if you want more details, you can look at it later. So in April, what I drew from people's comments was that the community needs to be involved in the planning of what is going to be done with Douglas Park, that there's shared responsibility between the community and the city, and that there needs to be better communication between city departments and the community to move forward. And by and large, everybody asked for increased activities, especially family activities in the park. And at this point, I want to thank the Parks and Recreation, especially for them supporting the Neighborhood Association back in April when we put on an event for Earth Day in the park. And then generally, Parks and Recreation, thank you. Also the Police Department, Douglas Athletic Association, a lot of other community groups that stepped up and increased activities in the park in the last several months. So then in the second forum, again, one of the topics that came up was better communication between the city and the general community. Again, more people want more activities if possible. And then something that I want to focus on that I think's crucial for moving forward with planning in the park is was mentioned several times, several tables, and then in the general discussion, which is a better interdepartmental communication between city departments that are involved in development and planning of the park, and again between the community and the city staff. So I'm just going to I took some pictures this afternoon about 12:45, run around the park there, and you see a focus on the fences. So we have Jeff Jr.'s athletic field here, and on the other side of Fifth Street, the athletic field. Span across that intersection, again, you see more of the field, and then Rogers there, and then if you open up, you see the entrance to the park. So we have green chain link. Here we have the Parks and Recreation fencing, which is the wood ranch style fence. You walk down the sidewalk and look from the other angle. You can see Jeff Jr. up there on the hill. The playground, same wood fence, heading towards Providence. And then what was going on at the shelter today, the lunch in the park, I stopped in a couple of times this summer and it was really well attended. Today they had the bookmobile there. And then if you look over on the bank, there are the people who would have been using the shelter if the lunch in the park and the bookmobile wasn't using it today. So there's where the branch style fence meets the chain link again, heading south on Providence, Columbia Public Schools. Turn around across the street, CHA, the entrance there, I think it's Providence Walkway. Then you step back onto the school grounds and you look into the entrance of the walkway. I won't show the traffic. I think we all know about the traffic on Providence here. You know, there's no way to get out on the sidewalk when you come down these steps. So you see everybody goes south towards Park Avenue there. And you can, like I said, I'll send you the link and you can check some of this stuff out if you so please. So I just, my comment is kind of a request that the council does what it can. I don't know if you can do anything to support the staff and different departments and the community in planning for what's next for Douglas Park. So thanks.
Are you going to mail this report, email it to us?
Yeah, I can.
I'd appreciate it if you email it to all of us. Thank you, Mr. Thomas, very much.
Thank you.
Could I ask a question? I think you said something about closing the park, closing the gate at the park. If I remember right, the ordinance says that parks close at 10:30. All city parks close at 10:30. Is that correct?
11.
Okay. So maybe if you want the park open later, we should change that ordinance.
It's a kind of a long story to get into. I don't know if we want to get into it now or.
Right. We'll move to item A, please read item A.
Agenda item A is the consideration of the route changes to the Columbia Transit System.
Staff, please.
John.
Staff has prepared for council consideration some route adjustments for the Columbia Transit System. Staff is proposing to eliminate the 106 Orbiter, the Brown route downtown, and create the FastCat route. Some additional changes would be made to the 102 loop, what we call the blue route, to accommodate some William Street and Paris Road locations, as well as the 104 red route southeast to pick up the Paquin tires, which the Orbiter used to serve. On the screen, you'll see the FastCat route as it's being proposed to start on August 13th. The project cost for this, it originally said $425 annually in the first memo, and we've got that cost reduced to $350 with some hour changes in the summer hours, not to run that through the summer. And the revenue from the Brookside contract is about $90,000. If council wishes to proceed after the public hearing, they need to direct staff to make the route changes. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions from council?
I do. I received an email from someone who uses another bus route and wants to make a connection to this FastCat. And it will not connect to Wabash, but it comes very close, like less than half a block.
Yes.
But the question was that her bus usually drops her off at 6:40 at Wabash, and then this one would hit that area. It starts at 6:40, or I'm trying to figure out if someone could catch the bus and.
I believe it starts with all the rest of them. It's just it runs later than the rest on certain days, but it.
Where does it start from?
I'm assuming it starts somewhere around the Wabash station. It'll start, but I'll have to check on that. I don't know exactly where the starting point is.
The buses all start at Wabash, don't they?
Yep.
And then, so they have to get to the route really to start it. But
so if someone was dropped off at 6:40 and this left started at 6:40, they should be able to.
Within 15 minutes, they ought to see a bus. Because that's our headway on this route.
So they may not be able to get the first.
If this started at. I'm sorry.
Pardon
if this started at 6 a.m., let's say, then it might not be there at 6:40.
We're hoping for 15-minute headways on this route. So if anywhere along the route, you see a bus within 15 minutes.
Any other questions by council?
Aren't we changing all the bus routes to cross the fast-track route, FastCat route?
No, sir.
We're not?
We're not.
I thought we were doing that.
Ultimately, it's a goal. But
yeah, at this point, I think they all get within half a block of it, which is kind of a practice we have now, I believe, where you walk.
The only ones that cross probably are the black and gold routes, the commuter routes that we use for the university. The others come to the Wabash Station.
And they'd be half a block from the fast cat?
How about the red route west, whatever that number is? That could move, you could move that a block and have it stop at Pipton Walnut, which is where the fast cat, I don't know if you've planned for that yet.
I have not yet, sir.
I think the point is that there are a lot of possibilities for moving routes a block here and there, have them all connect. Am I right?
Yes.
All right. Yes. Any other questions?
The $90,000 Brookside is putting in, how many passes is that for $90,000? Is that all of their rental?
420.
Yes, it's one per student. So it's, I have to do the math, it's 6250 divided into 90,000. Well, 80,000, sorry, and that's.
Is that all of their apartment complexes downtown?
Yes.
The 90? Okay. Mm-hmm. And eliminating the orbiter saves $206,000?
Yes.
So we're about $113,000 deficit on paying for the fast cat?
Mm-hmm. We interviewed some tremendous candidates to take the role of our first sales agent, and I'm happy to say we discovered some standouts, and I'm pretty confident John will have someone on board quickly, and their job is to fix that deficit.
Any other questions at this point? I'm going to open up hearing to the public. Anyone from the public like to speak?
Mayor, councilpersons. My name is Cheryl Price. I live at 511 Parkade Boulevard. I'm a board member for Services for Independent Living, and I serve on the city's Disability Commission. One thing that I wasn't clear about was, is there going to be no bus running by Paquin anymore, in front of Paquin?
That's the change to the red route. Thanks, John, you've got it. So there will be. We're changing the red route to Cat. To
it will go by Paquin in the front.
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am.
And I noticed on the one map that Lenore and Discovery Drive out in that area, the 104 red, is that the only dropping of an area that's going to happen?
Yes. Yes, we will be dropping Lenore.
And will there be any changes at all in paratransit? Hours, days, anything?
No, ma'am.
Thank you all very much for working so hard to make this amenable to a lot of different people. Appreciate your hard work.
Thank you, Ms. Price.
I'm Monta Welch, 2808 Greenbrier Drive, speaking on behalf of Columbia Climate Change Coalition and Interfaith Care for Creation. And we did just hear about the greenhouse gas emissions report. So I want to thank our city for focusing on transportation and continuing to focus on that to see what we could do to increase maybe hours, and if we have some new staff looking to remedy deficits, maybe we can find ways to fund other kinds of changes that I think I'm hearing in the city would be really beneficial to a lot of our low-income folks, to stretch the hours out, maybe even consider some additional weekend times for people who work on weekends. And being out in the community a lot lately, I definitely know that this is an issue for a lot of our low-income folks, and getting to jobs that they actually could take that are here available if they had a better access to different hours and this transportation. So I encourage us to look at how we can extend according to the questions just asked by the previous commenter, these hours. I think it would help a lot of people and, you know, the routes, expanding what we have. So I'd like to encourage our city to look at that, please. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Welch. Anyone else? I'm going to close the...
My name is Tyree Bynum. I live at 501 North Providence Road here in Columbia. I just have one question, and I've talked to quite a few people just about the bus system. I know that there's been a lot of discussion, I don't know the exact term, in the middle of the process with the EEZ about different census tracts, or what is the actual term, how they're blocked, different blockings. But there's been some communication between city and county. I talk to a lot of people that live in the county, such as different areas around the city. They have a huge issue with transportation, and they're now on the bus route. And I would just ask if we could have some type of conversation with the county to figure out a way to at least be a part of the plan to extend those to some of these pockets of areas where there's no, where the access to the community is really tough, such as areas like at the end of Scott Boulevard, out in Bangor, just certain areas around Lake of the Woods. And really, when you look at these properties, they have a lot of issues getting in town. And so they've been, a lot of people have been sharing that with me, and I thought I would just bring this as an opportunity to just start that conversation. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? I'm going to close the public hearing. Council discussion.
I was going to mention one thing is that that let's just say, for the sake of argument, let's just, to make the math easy, let's say that 10% of expenses are fares. There's really only a $45,000 gap to close, except that Gary's right, because we don't intend to permanently fund it from the parking fund. Is that correct? This is just for this, for now, is that? But.
What's your question again to Gary?
I guess it wasn't a question. It was a comment. Is that we don't intend to fund it permanently, and I'm not seeing anybody contradicting me, so.
Any other discussion?
Look like good changes. Again, I'm just really pleased to see us being able to do a transit expansion in a tough budget year.
I guess I'll just say this. College towns like Iowa City, Ames, and Champaign have 100 rides per capita. We have less than 20. And we can do a lot better. And I think, for me, I view this as a first step towards a reorganization, towards establishing a far more robust transit system that serves the university, that serves, and the more robust the system is, the more routes we have, the more we can extend the routes, the more money we have to do that. So I think this, I view this as a first and important step. So I'm excited to see it start on August 13th. I'll need a motion and a second to approve the above-mentioned transit route changes.
Well, so move.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. PR 118-12.
Councilable 118-12 is a policy resolution establishing a fund balance reserve policy. Second reading.
Staff, please.
John. What this would do was establish a fund reserve balance for our general fund at 20%. The city has had a informal policy of having a 16% fund balance. We thought it was a formal policy, but we could find no written documentation to confirm that. What this does is provides written documentation that our general fund reserve balance will be at least 20%. And the fund balance currently exceeds that amount, so it doesn't require any changes in what we're doing currently. It just makes it a formal policy, so which will help us maintain our good bond rating and also provide a formal policy when our external auditors come and review our financial statements. So this will provide documentation of that policy.
Questions from staff, council?
Yeah, could you explain a little why 20% was chosen versus the 16?
All right.
We've been operating.
Well, what we did is I did a bunch of research, and my staff also helped me with other cities of what their policy is. We found a range from a low of 16 to a high of 25%. So what we have done is this puts it in the middle, because 16% is what would normally be 2 months of expenditures. And this provides an additional cushion so that if we would have some unforeseen event occur that required us to draw down the general fund from the 20%, we would still have the 16% to cover 2 months expenditures. So this is that little bit of cushion that would provide that extra if we would need it. And the GFOA is moving to that direction. It's going up because of, it was found that during the latest economic downturn that 16% really wasn't quite adequate. So that's the reason for the 20.
Mm-hmm. A follow-up question. I believe in maybe 2008 we actually had a 24, at some point around there, a 24% reserve. So nothing in this will keep us from having a larger reserve than 20% in the good years.
Absolutely not. All this does is set a benchmark that we would, if we fall below 20% for any reason, that we work to get it to at least 20%. It can always go above, and it's above there today.
We're around 23%, aren't we?
Correct.
And we're not authorizing you to spend 3%.
I would have never expected that, Councilman.
That will require a motion.
That would require appropriation. Yes.
Any other questions by council?
Yes. I think you answered, we were a little bit hurried, and I think you answered my question during the break. This is an average over the year, so that on any, and then presumably there's some window in which, like on any given day, you might not have 20%.
Right. It is our goal to keep it at 20%, and if it could go slightly below that, but if it does, we would try to get it back to 20% as quickly as possible.
For example, if the payroll is 15th, then then the DOR remits sales tax on the 16th or something.
Correct.
Like that.
Absolutely.
And then the other concern I have is that there's no provision or language to discourage dipping below the 16%. My concern is that, let's say, for reason number one, large one-time costs, but use of reserves would provide a long-term cost savings. If we dipped down to 10%, then we can have another emergency and not have sufficient reserves even within the two-year planning. So is there some phrasing that we can add that says we don't want to, like for me, dip really, our goal is not to dip under 16%, which keeps us at the good bond rating. So I don't, consider some language for that?
Well, I think we do have the language, you know, that if we get below 20%, that we have to provide you a plan to get it back to 20% or above within 2 years. So I think that does what you're asking. I don't know how to put anything else in, really.
I guess the follow-up question is, I see what Councilperson Hoppe is saying is the second page right below number four, if in any fiscal year, not that one. Now I guess my other question, it seemed to me, I could see the concern, and this is the problem of what we've been doing for years, we're now putting it in writing. Is this just a GASB requirement or GFOA requirement that we have the policy written down.
And yes, it is a GFOA recommendation. It is also a question that the bond rating agencies ask every time, is if we have a formal written cash fund balance reserve policy.
And given that we've been informally shooting for a minimum of 16%, this is doing no less than what we've been doing for the last 20, 30 years, I guess.
That is correct. This just makes it a formal written policy that has council action that I can provide to the rating agencies and also to provide to the external auditors.
We could view this as a dotting the I's and crossing the T's.
Correct.
And could I follow up on one more question?
Certainly.
So the deterrent for going under 16% is that we would lose our bond, our good bond rating. So that's an incentive for this council as well as future councils and staff not to go under that minimum. And that may change, as you said, to a higher amount.
Right. And also, it would, if we went below that for a period of time and didn't have a plan to raise it back to 20%, I would expect that our external auditors would also put that in our management letter to council, so they would bring that to your attention as well. So you have that protection also.
I would think if we went, we also have the deterrent, don't we, of if we went below, much below 10%, we'd start bouncing checks.
It could delay payment. We would not bounce checks, but we could, we would delay payment if that was the case, because we monitor our cash flow very, very closely. So we would not bounce any checks, but we would perhaps delay payments until we had adequate fund balance. The other thing that to keep us from going below that, for us to go below that would require you to appropriate using fund balance at some point. So for us to go below this 20%, we would have to bring an appropriation request to you to use fund balance for some purpose. So you would be aware of any reason that we would be using fund balance to draw it down below 20%. So you would have to prove that up front as an appropriation request. That's your another control.
The fund that's below, way, way below, is the transit fund, which is probably close to zero right now. I don't recall that we have a two-year plan, so I guess you'll have to be sending us a memo on that one.
Well, that's why we talk about other funds try to maintain a 10% balance.
Mm-hmm.
Because your enterprise funds, such as transit, can operate at a lower cash reserve because of their size and the other.
Oh, you were explaining that last year this time. I remember now.
This 20% is general fund only.
Yes, that is correct, Councilman.
If there are no more questions, I'll invite anyone from the public to come forward to speak. Any more discussion by council? Please call the roll. Go ahead, Brett.
I was just going to say, I appreciate Ms. Hoppe's point that, could be some incentive to say something stronger because that's what we've been doing, but we have enough incentive not to. Plus, we run the risk of tying our hands if we ever were to run into more trouble than we've run into in the last recession. So,
please call a roll.
Council Bill 11812, Mr. McDavid?
Yes.
Schmidt?
Yes.
Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Mr. Pespel?
Yes.
Mr. Dudley?
Yes.
Ms. Anthony?
Yes.
Ms. Hoppe?
Yes.
17212.
Council Bill 17212 is an ordinance amending Chapter 29 of the City Code as it relates to the scenic roadway area overlay and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Staff, please.
Tim.
This is a proposed amendment to Section 29-21.2 of the city zoning ordinance, scenic road overlay, which is a enabling ordinance that describes the procedure by which roads can be established as scenic roads, and then once established, it has some supplemental rules for them. And this amendment will expand the provisions in that section somewhat. It'll alter selected provisions and then leave some others intact. Notable among the changes are there is added a corridor planning and roadway design public involvement process. Those are two different sections, and those are procedures that follow the designation of a given route as a scenic roadway. And then the ordinance also defines more clearly what constitutes routine maintenance. These would be activities that may be done without any particular approval or public involvement. And then what might constitute alterations and improvements, and these are things that would trigger the public involvement process that's described in the draft ordinance that you have in front of you. This was a referral from the City Council asking your Planning and Zoning Commission to look at the overlay and strengthen it somewhat. And I think what's been produced is a careful and deliberate procedure, but also an orderly procedure for considering future scenic roadways, as well as managing scenic roadways once they're established. And the commission, after a hearing, did recommend this by a vote of 7-0 as it's presented to you tonight. I'll try to answer any questions you may have.
Is Rock Quarry the only scenic roadway we have at this point?
Yes, sir.
That and where is it? Is it the entirety of Rock Quarry, or does it end at Grindstone?
It would end at Nifong, I believe, and there's a section, of course, that is in and out of the city limits that's farther south of that.
Other questions by council?
I have sort of a question, comment. I plan to offer a small amendment to the ordinance that adds three words. In the purpose of the scenic roadway area, after the word scenic, a conservation, preservation, and enhancement of the scenic, and then I would propose natural and historic qualities. And there were a series of meetings and discussions with stakeholders and members of the Planning and Zoning Commission, and that those two words, adding natural and historic, were proposed and agreed upon, but somehow it got dropped out. I didn't catch it when staff ran it by me. Staff didn't catch it, so I'd like to make, I plan on making that amendment.
Would you like to make it now?
I would like to make the amendment now then.
I have a motion to amend to add natural and historic.
Scenic.
It's already there.
Right. Any discussion on the proposed amendment? All in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. Any other questions by council?
I have a concern about the top of page 5. It says, this bottom of 4, starting on 5, the corridor plan may prohibit large vehicles from using the road, or they may be limited to the city council to preserve the scenic quality of the road. I thought we voted on a large vehicle or large truck proposal not long ago about this road. And what this is doing is not allowing those vehicles on the road. I'm thinking of fire engines, garbage trucks, school buses, those vehicles. And we talked about that in that meeting and decided we couldn't prohibit large vehicles.
I think the language is permissive. In other words, it would enable that to be a possible outcome of the planning process, but not necessarily a consequence of something being designated a scenic road.
But wouldn't that go against the council's vote from some meetings ago?
No.
We're viewing this ordinance as applicable to our scenic road that we have today, but also perhaps a future scenic road.
Okay. So what is the issue with allowing large trucks on that road? Is the road base not designed for large trucks?
Are you speaking of Rock Quarry Road in particular?
Yes.
Well, I know there's concern about the turn radiuses and that kind of thing, and you know, it's not a curb and gutter road, so heavyweight trucks are going to be more destructive to it.
Do we have city vehicles running on that road now?
Trash
trucks?
Mm-hmm.
School buses?
It would surprise me if we don't. There are housing developments that are accessed.
I think we should strike this out of that ordinance. about large trucks. We've already voted it down once.
But I think it just allows for future councils and other scenic roads, as well as this one, that latitude. It doesn't contradict what the council did in the past.
Seems to me that it does.
It doesn't allow it.
And also, isn't it that the corridor plan will have to be approved?
And it has to go through a process.
So
yeah,
I think at that point, you have the ability to, you know, either carve that exception out for city vehicles or, you know, emergency vehicles, city vehicles. But what it might do at some point is, you know, on a case-by-case basis, this is for, you know, further requests that, you know, if there is, you know, tractor-trailer trucks using it for reasons that they don't need to be there, then, yeah, it might give them the ability to do that. But I also see this as permissive and not. It's a case-by-case basis, and there's got to be a corridor plan. So we'll have an ability to address that issue when we have a request.
Mm. So there will be a corridor plan forthcoming?
Yes, sir. And the corridor plan, like any plan, that's not going to be an ordinance in itself. It'll set some goals and objectives. And then the subsequent design process at which any alterations or reconstruction of road is discussed, those goals and objectives have to be referred back to in that process. And that's when mm-hmm. it'll be determined if there's a detrimental impact of heavy trucks on a given
route.
And
you prohibit large trucks in the corridor plan?
Not in the plan, but a special ordinance could be introduced as a consequence of a plan to decide in the...
This says the corridor plan may prohibit large vehicles. Can we prohibit large vehicles in the corridor
plan? Well, I think ordinarily a plan document's going to recommend something, and that may be the way it's stated, is that this plan recommends that these be prohibited. I would think there'd be an amendment of the traffic ordinance that you'd have to make in addition.
I don't want us to trap ourselves here on this large vehicle.
Yeah, I don't think it. I think it shows intent without locking us in.
Okay. So should we?
I think if I read it right, it's just because it's on the CATSO plan or whatever. Is that what this is referring to?
Well, it's again, once a road is designated scenic, there's going to be some standards that are going to be developed out of this planning process. Mm-hmm. And one possible outcome is there might be a finding that maybe the
where's
road's
the,
width, maybe some of the qualities of the roadside or something are
the CATSO plan
not conducive to really large vehicles. Maybe it's freight.
Then we may deviate from that CATSO plan or master transportation plan.
CATSO will create, if the ordinance is approved, CATSO will work on designating scenic roads on the major roadway plan, mm-hmm. just for reference, but
yeah,
they're really not going to be part of the regulatory process.
But what I'm seeing this section as being about is about saying we may deviate from that, mm-hmm. from those plans.
Oh yeah, there's no standard template for a scenic road. In other words, it's, mm-hmm. I think that's the very point of having the stakeholder group do a planning process followed by a roadway design process. Is realize that off the shelf design cross sections mm-hmm. don't lend themselves very well to the qualities that we find scenic
and
sometimes.
If I remember my training correctly, that's kind of where the Highway Administration would like us to go, would be to do more, you could even say this is part of context-sensitive solutions, perhaps.
Right. There's reference made, for example, in roadside improvements to the permitting the use of natural materials like stone and timber for mm-hmm. signage. But, again, so long as they meet ASHTO standards, which would be a
mm-hmm.
an engineering standard for roadway safety.
Which I would imagine the current doesn't, but we won't go there.
The other issue I see, it's used several times in this ordinance, is it says surrounding area. I'd like to have that defined, surrounding area. What's that mean? Does that mean out onto Grindstone and out onto Stadium as part of this surrounding area?
I think properties that connect with the corridor, so it would just be an indication that in the planning process we're not to look narrowly at just the legal right-of-way that's public, but also adjacent property.
Anything that connects to Rock Quarry Road is surrounding area?
That would be my definition of it, is kind of properties that are adjacent to that right-of-way. But again, this is not an ordinance that rezones those properties and that kind of thing. There are some supplemental rules. There's a vegetative buffer requirement. That's already in the ordinance. This really just clarifies how those terms are understood, but doesn't...
Thinking about the intersection of rock quarry and grindstone, we have possible development going on there. Will this affect that development?
Are we talking about the break time?
Possibly.
It doesn't extend across Nifong. That's my understanding is that it does not across.
Yeah, the requirement there is the vegetative buffer requirement does apply to that. And that's already in the ordinance.
Okay. Any other questions by council? Would anyone from the public like to speak?
Monta Welch, on behalf of Columbia Climate Change Coalition and Interfaith Care for Creation, 2808 Greenbrier Drive, also as a citizen. But I would like to say that the scenic roadway, I believe, is also going to be very good for tourism and the historic preservation kinds of concepts with that report that we heard before, because these are historic, usually, roads as well. And they also, with the vegetation, et cetera, the large trees, the shade provided, I believe that there are a lot of different positive reasons to encourage this kind of special characteristic for our city and our community. So I do think that it would be really advisable for us to be somewhat proactive in thinking about the scenic roadway, whether it's even designated or not, just the greenbelt areas as well throughout our community. It'll be very beneficial to us and also improve our tourism dollars and other things, just our own, you know, public health and well-being here in our community as well. Just have a nice drive that folks can take. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Welch. Anyone else? Move to council discussion. Any discussion by council?
I just want to thank staff for working on this issue for an extended period of time, and also for the Planning and Zoning Commission working on it. And I think our last speaker was correct that often our scenic roads are historic and can tie into historic tourism and the economic benefits of that we just heard.
And I'd just like to say I think this is long overdue. Rock Quarry has undergone some significant changes over the years, and they haven't been scenic or preserving the natural character. I am very happy that we're actually going to vote on this tonight and hopefully pass it. I intend to support it wholeheartedly. And look forward to possibly other roads that might be designated as scenic also.
I think it puts a lot of impetus on us to get a transit system up to snuff so that 20,000 university students aren't driving down Rock Quarry Road every day. Please call the roll.
Council Bill 17212 as amended. Mr. McDavid?
Yes.
Mr. Schmidt?
Yes.
Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Mr. Kessel?
Yes.
Mr. Dudley?
Yes.
Ms. Anthony?
Yes.
Ms. Hoppe?
Yes.
174-12.
Council Bill 17412 is an ordinance changing the uses allowed on CP zone property located on the east side of State Route B, Paris Road, north of East Brown Station Road, and south of the U.S. Highway 63 Paris Road overpass 3300 Paris Road, approving a revised statement of intent, approving the Paris Road Plaza CP plan phase 4, and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Staff, please.
Yeah.
This ordinance approves a CP, or Planned Business District Development Plan, for two different parts of an existing CP-zoned tract that's a total of 10 acres, does have a building already developed on it, and Those lots are designated as 102A and 103A, and they are north and south of the Orscheln building that exists today. And a second change is to make some new designations of allowed uses in the CP district. And this is mainly using existing zoning ordinance terminology for things that had already been put in the statement of intent for that CP when it was originally approved. Also, there's a request to expand the total square feet allowed on the whole CP tract from 50,000 square feet to 78,500 square feet. This additional allowance is needed because when the Orscheln plan was approved as really the first building to go in to this development, we did count a square feet of 15,000 square foot outdoor sales area as part of the building size. So that building has very nearly taken all the originally planned square feet in the CP, leaving some platted lots with almost nothing to develop. And at the time, the property owner that had sold the property did acknowledge that he would need to do this revised CP plan and bring it back for public hearings. So what you have is a CP plan that, again, identifies planned buildings both north and south of the Orscheln structure on State Route B. And then it does increase within the CP the square foot limits and make some detailed changes to the allowed uses within the CP district. The Planning and Zoning Commission recommended this by unanimous vote, 7-0. Subject to four conditions. Two of those conditions pertain to site lighting, one to landscaping, and one to building height on the northerly the height of the northerly building. And all those conditions have been satisfied in the applicant's resubmittal, and that's why this item was put on old business tonight. It did qualify as a consent agenda item. So I just thought I'd make council aware of that. But they did amend the plan since it was introduced to meet those four conditions of approval recommended by your Planning and Zoning Commission. With that, I'll try to answer any questions you may have.
So just so I'm clear, the statement of intent was revised after the P&Z hearing only to reflect the four conditions that were placed recommended at P&Z?
Yes, and a couple of those conditions were resolved by making changes directly to the plan. For example, the 25-foot lighting maximum height on the northern lot, that's indicated on the plan now as a specification. Also, the landscape screen with 80% opacity, that's indicated on the landscape plan.
So the revised statement of intent only deals with, the only change is the building height?
That's right. On the plan too, if I'm not mistaken. 25-foot building height is designated for.
So what are the revisions?
Building. Pardon?
What are the revisions to the statement of intent?
Let me go over those. We've got an increase in the allowed square feet from 50,000 to 78,500. And this, again, is over 10 acres of property, so it does include the Orscheln building. And the commission noted that that's still not a really intense commercial development, such as you might find in a C3. And then there were changes to the uses, the names of those uses. And then it's... indicated that building 102A will have a 25-foot height maximum. And then
building height.
The minimum percentage open space is at 30%. So those
and don't the lights have to shine back on the building?
Oh, the lights are downward directed. And that is all noted on the plan. So you've got a revised statement of intent, you've got a revised plan that goes with it.
I guess my question is, are the revisions substantial and does it need to be bounced back to planning and zoning? And I guess that would
no,
be...
No, these were all recommendations of the commission.
Okay.
Yeah, these changes are to conform with the four recommendations of approval. I'm sorry I didn't make that
And clear.
And that's included in the amendment sheet, so may I have a motion and a second to amend 174-12 per the amendment sheet?
So moved.
Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay.
The original Orscheln building, was it increased in size?
Well, there was a planned building on that size that had a different configuration, quite honestly, but yes, it was an increase.
Was it pushed back to the back of the lot when that happened? Was it
there may have been some reduction of rear, actual rear distance. I couldn't tell you how much.
The reason I'm asking that question, I've been out there a couple of nights, and I was out there today. The lights on the Orscheln building, which we probably can't do anything about, shine away from the building. And the issue I see is the building is much lower than the land behind it. So those lights go directly into the woods, not into the leafy tree. They go directly into the base of the trees, and they're shining clear through the neighborhood behind. And those lights probably should have been turned around to shine against the building. If that was done, the neighbors out there would be satisfied. I'm concerned about the A-frames out there. Will that be the same situation? Will those lights shine toward the A-frame buildings? Are they going to shine back toward the
Our lighting ordinance actually says that you can't expose adjacent residential property to glare, and then there's also a candle power value that can't be exceeded at the property line with residential, so we could actually check that.
But we have already done one resident behind the Orscheln building.
Yeah, and if there's visible glare, if there's a wall pack light, for example, and the source of that light can be viewed directly from that residence or that residential property, we could intervene.
The problem is it sits so low, you can look through the trees, the base of the trees, and see the lights.
Yeah, we could see if there's basically a deflector-type structure that could be put over that would direct it downward more so, because usually those are security lights that are intended to light below, not uplight.
Can we make that a part of this proposal?
It is part of the CP zoned tract. It's not owned by the individual making this particular request.
So we don't have we don't have to do anything.
I think we should just do an inspection at night see if it is light trespass or glare.
And I saw the four things planning and zoning recommended was shining the lights back toward the buildings, putting them on the proper line, shining back. Are they going to do that? Okay. Great.
Any other questions? Would anyone from the public like to speak?
Good evening. Garrett Taylor, 1103 East Broadway. We represent Paris Road Plaza LLC. Mr. Teddy did an excellent job. I just wanted to know if there was any questions of us or the developer in this case. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Let's move to discussion by council. Any comments by council? Hearing none, let's please call the roll.
Council Bill 174-12 as amended. Mr. McDavid?
Yes.
Mr. Schmidt?
Yes.
Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Mr. Cuspel?
Yes.
Mr. Dudley?
Yes.
Ms. Anthony?
Yes.
Ms. Hoppe?
Yes.
180-12.
Council Bill 180-12 is an ordinance appropriating funds for consultant services for the assessment, preparation, and implementation of revisions to the City of Columbia zoning ordinances and subdivision regulations, and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Staff, please.
So you'll remember Councilmember Anthony brought this issue to us and recommended it. We, on council approval, have come back with an idea to this is first of all our best guess as to what this work will cost, and second, a way to fund it. So that's really what's presented for you tonight. It's a way to really get some outside muscle, brain power, to finish off to implement the strategic, the comprehensive plan, excuse me, and really that involves the assessment, preparation, and implementation of zoning ordinance changes and subdivision regs. So it's a lot of work, and their help will be greatly appreciated by staff. And so our best guess is that's about $150,000, and recommend using fund balance for $100,000, and then $25,000 from council reserve, and another $25,000 from contingency. This way, we can begin this work this fiscal year, and it, you know, it's a one-time expense, so it's not a, it's not an operating budget impact in this way. So that's what we'll recommend for your consideration.
We have an anticipated timeline on this. How long will it take? Years?
It'll take some time.
Short of period.
If I may, the schedules I'm seeing in reviewing what other communities do in the way of scope of services, probably 12 months minimum, 18 months is fairly common. Okay. So I would say multi-year effort.
Any other questions by council? Would anyone from the public like to speak? Council discussion.
Well, I'd just like to say that I would appreciate the support of my fellow council members. The comp plan, as you know, has been going for a number of years, and we really do need to finish it strong. And I think that, you know, what we're hoping to have come from this is a good plan. It's in the process of, it's going to be in the process of being written, but also more, as importantly, is the implementation of the plan, and that includes an overhaul, hopefully an overhaul of our zoning regs, which are so desperately needed. They're antiquated, they're not, we don't have enough tools in our toolbox to allow some creative development and some more efficient development, and I just think this is a way to finish this process in a strong manner and to get it done as quickly as possible.
If I could just add, this has been an outgrowth also of the visioning process and the comprehensive planning and the modernization of the zoning. And so we do need to put this extra effort into it to get it done, and so the whole community can benefit from the results. So I appreciate the support of the rest of the council on that.
I'm going to support this. I think it's a great idea. I am going to look at this with interest because replacing some of the emphasis of use by form could result in some interesting consequences. And I think of the issues that we confront at a council level, they are use issues. You know, for example, the proposed break time that at Grindstone and Rock Quarry, I think that's the location of it. Those neighbors really are not going to care what that building looks like. They don't want the use there. And I think of form versus use when you're talking about the controversy we have in Grasslands with residences that have now been co-opted basically in the rental units. Form-wise, they look like houses, but they are certainly not being used as single-family houses. So in those two areas, it just seems to me that use is trumping form. And I also can't help this, but if you're looking at form as opposed to use, I significantly doubt that a council would have approved a 10-story parking garage in downtown.
Can I just, I won't respond to the very last comment. I never like to talk about the garage. I just don't. But I will say that, you know, the form-based, and I think there's been some, you know, since the article ran in the Tribune, I think there's been a misunderstanding. You know, the form-based zoning isn't going to be appropriate in residential areas. I mean, in the suburban residential areas, I think it'll be, people have been looking at it as an answer to some of our problems in our downtown area. So I think they're going to be very selective, and this plan will set that forth, I think, very clearly, that, you know, form-based zoning is not going to replace our existing zoning overall. It's going to be another tool in the toolbox to use in specific areas. And, you know, I think it'll be welcomed by the developers. I think it's just going to be, there are certain areas in town that are going to be probably, you know, perfect for a form-based zoning, but it certainly isn't going to be out in the suburbs.
Yeah.
Have we had public input yet? I can't remember now.
We did.
All right, we did. So we're in discussion phase.
Oh, my God, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yeah.
Other discussion.
I was just going to add to that. This is where bringing in the consultant will help so that we can learn from how other cities have implemented this so that we don't walk into the traps that the mayor has mentioned, the trap of unforeseen consequences. We know what we mean. We don't know how to say it, and that's where the consultant comes in.
And if I could just add regarding the form-based zoning, there are nuances to it, and we did have a good workshop about 2 years ago that a lot of the community members came to, as well as guests from other communities that had used it. So there are quite a bit of nuances to the whole process.
Any other discussion? Please call the roll.
Council Bill 18012. Mr. McDavid?
Yes.
Mr. Schmidt?
Yes.
Mr. Tratt?
Yes.
Mr. Kespel?
Yes.
Mr. Dudley?
Yes.
Ms. Anthony?
Yes.
Ms. Hoppe?
Yes.
Move the consent agenda. Please read the bills.
Items on the consent agenda include bills 173-12, 175-12, 176-12, 177-12, 178-12, 179-12, and resolutions 119-12, 120-12, 121-12, 122-12, 123-12, 124-12, 125-12, 126-12, 127-12, 128-12, and 129-12.
Please call the roll.
Bills 173-12, 175-12, 176-12, 177-12, 178-12, 179-12, and resolutions 119-12, 120-12, 121-12, 122-12, 123-12, 124-12, 125-12, 126-12, 127-12, 128-12, and 129-12. Mr. McDavid?
Yes.
Mr. Schmidt?
Yes.
Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Mr. Kespel?
Yes.
Mr. Dudley?
Yes.
Ms. Anthony?
Yes.
Ms. Hoppe?
Yes.
Please read 130-12.
Council Bill 130-12 is a resolution authorizing an agreement for engineering services with Trek Design Group, LLC, for completion of the FY 2012 inflow and infiltration study of the sewer collection system.
Staff, please.
Yeah. Council first authorized an agreement with Trek Design in October 2010 to perform sanitary sewer evaluation study for the Flat Branch Basin D, which includes smoke testing, GPS manhole survey, or manhole lids, and internal and external inspections of all buildings in the basin. The following three-year additional basins were identified for the study and completed by Trek. To date, four basins are complete and 278 INI sources found. With this agreement, Trek will perform evaluations in the next two priority basins, County House Branches B and E, not to exceed an amount of $723,971. Cost to date for INI evaluations are $1,085,000. The funding comes from the sewer utility operation, and so the total would be $1.8 million. I'd be happy to answer any questions Council might have.
I have a question. I know that in the budget proposal, you're proposing 15% sewer rate increase, 8% of which is to satisfy the bond requirements in 2008. The other 7% is operational. Is this part of that operational? I think the general public is going to want an explanation about why you're proposing to increase operational expenses by more than the CPI, and I assume this is part of the reason.
Yes, this is part of the reason. The other part of the reason is when we did the 08 ballot, we didn't do any operational increases due to the economy in 08 and 09, and so we put off some operational things that we need to do, and so we're catching up.
All right. Well, there'll be an opportunity for you to satisfy us with that. Any other questions? Would anyone from the public like to speak? As far as discussion from the council, is there any? I think we've all learned a lot more about infiltration and flow than we ever thought we would or had ever heard of it before we got here, but it's a necessary part of infrastructure and sounds like a great plan. Please call the roll.
Council Bill 130-12, Mr. McDavid?
Yes.
Mr. Schmidt?
Yes.
Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Mr. Kessel?
Yes.
Mr. Dudley?
Yes.
Ms. Anthony?
Yes.
Ms. Hoppy?
Yes.
131-12.
Council Bill 131-12 is a resolution authorizing agreements for transportation services with CCAL 301 Campus View Drive LLC and Rock Quarry Properties LLC, doing business as The Point at Rock Quarry Park.
Staff, please.
Well, this really is part of our kind of entrepreneurial approach on transit, and I'm very pleased to present these. Transit staff's worked very hard to get them to this point. These are new contracts for transit service on the Gold Route. John, other details?
Basically, it's with Campus View Apartments and Rock Quarry Properties for a total bed count of about 260. We're charging 62.34. University of Missouri still houses some students at Campus View, and they're currently paying about they're currently paying $60 per bed for those as well.
Any questions?
On the Campus View contract, there's a section 3.5. On the Point contract, it's omitted.
Pardon?
On the Campus View contract, there's a section 3.5, and on the other contract, there's no 3.5. Was that done intentionally? It says you can't sell passes for the Gold Route on the Campus View property.
I think that was something that was requested by one of the apartment complexes
and not by the
requested
point?
By the other. But is that right?
It's worked out with that particular Campus View.
Campus View wanted it on their contract.
Yes,
as far as, and the Point didn't care.
I'm assuming that the Point is probably all theirs are sold out. Campus View's got University and those type in there. So,
any other questions? Would anyone from the public like to speak? Council discussion.
Good work.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm hopeful that we can capture some of the other apartments south of town. I think that'll help the fiscal vitality of the transit system in general. I mean, we're providing a valuable service, you know, and I think we all understand that this town is driven by the students at the University of Missouri, and it's our obligation. They are citizens of the city of Columbia, and it's our obligation to make sure that they have a way to get to and from campus. And I view this as our obligation, and I look forward to increased collaboration with the university. I know that they feel like they have a walkable campus for the 8,000 on campus, but the point is they have almost 25,000 students off campus who are citizens, who are clients, and I think this is a great first step to provide a better and more robust transit system for them.
I think we should have two more contracts with two other apartment complexes coming in the near future. So.
Any other discussion? Please call the roll.
Council Bill 131-12, Mr. McDavid?
Yes.
Mr. Schmidt?
Yes.
Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Mr. Kessel?
Yes.
Mr. Dudley?
Yes.
Ms. Anthony?
Yes.
Ms. Hoppy?
Yes.
132-12.
Council Bill 132-12 is a resolution approving the preliminary plat of Red Oak South.
Staff.
Well, this is a request for a 9-lot preliminary plat of CP zone land. The general points are here on the council memo. Any other questions? Tim is here to save the day.
Council questions? Would anyone from the public like to speak? Any discussion? Please call the roll.
Council Bill 132-12, Mr. McDavid?
Yes.
Mr. Schmidt?
Yes.
Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Mr. Kessel?
Yes.
Mr. Dudley?
Yes.
Ms. Anthony?
Yes.
Ms. Hoppy?
Yes.
Introduction and first reading. Please read the bills.
All bills are introduced by the mayor unless otherwise indicated. Bills 18112, 18212, 18312, 18412, 18512, 18612, 18812, 18912, 19012, 19112, 19212, 19312, 19412, 19512, 19612, 19712, 19812, 19912, 212, 201, 12, 202, 12, 203, 12, 204, 12, 205, 12, 206, 12, 208, 12, 209, 12, 210, 12, 211, 12, 212, 12, 213, 12, 214, 12, and 215, 12. First reading.
We'll move to reports. We'll start with 118-12, which is a request to close some streets. Mid-Missouri Pride Fest is requesting closure of Cherry between 4th and 5th on Sunday, August 19th from 8 a.m. to 11:30 p.m. for their annual festival. SEC is, what's that acronym?
Special Event Committee.
It's always nice if you, first time you mention it, have the, too many acronyms for many of us here, recommends approval. And the CID did not. When I looked at the signatures, I really couldn't read them. Are all the abutting property owners sign on to this?
Yes.
Okay. So there was no dispute about that. And the second one was the Columbia Center for Urban Agriculture requested closing Smith Street between College and Fay on Friday, September 28th, 8 a.m. through Sunday, September 30th, until 1 p.m. for their fundraising event. And they also are requesting a waiver of the open container ordinance during the event hours, September 29th, 3 p.m. until 8 p.m. This one is outside the downtown per se, so it doesn't require CID review. And the Special Events Committee recommends approval of that. Also, any questions from council? Have staff. So may I have a motion to approve the street closure requests, including the waiver of open container for the Columbia Center for Urban Agricultural Events?
So move.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed say nay. 119-12 has to do with us making property non-conforming when we take their property to widen a road. Is that right?
That's right. And staff's recommending this, kind of just an equity thing, and would recommend or propose that it be referred to P&Z for public hearing and recommendation.
Any questions or comments from council? May I have a motion to refer the proposed ordinance to Planning and Zoning Commission?
So moved. Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. Next is 120, I guess, right? Staff, please.
John, would you walk us through a little history there?
Sure. This year we were Parks and Rec fleet maintenance was combined with the Public Works fleet maintenance, and in the event that we've Public Works has absorbed the Parks and Rec maintenance building, we noticed some deterioration, so we had a structural engineer look at the building, and it's an old hangar building that's been there since the airport was out there, and there's a lot of deterioration. Termite is riddled it, basically, where we can't fix it, and so we need to tear the building down and replace it with a new building. And so what we're proposing to do is demolish it at $100,000 and then replace it with about a $750,000 new fleet maintenance building for Parks and Rec.
Questions?
Should I ask my question? Is it not historic?
Well, it's an old hangar building. I can't use it as a hangar anymore, I'll just say.
It is.
Well, it's a wooden hangar, and those are historic in some places. But
may have a motion to direct staff to proceed with the building project, include contracting with an architect.
No move.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. 121-12 is a proposal to issue parking tags to Lee Elementary School for volunteers. Staff, please.
This is an item we've looked at, and in the response in front of you is really just a pure read of the ordinance that exists today. This, after consulting with Councilmember Hoppe, really is sort of off the topic from what you know, the Lee School folks were looking for, and Councilmember Hoppe has what I think might be a simpler solution. And so with that, what we might do, you know, this is what the ordinance allows, but there are other approaches what the ordinance allows, one of which is I am empowered as the city manager to conduct pilot projects in regard to traffic for up to 90 days before council must bless it or reject it. That is one alternative you could consider here. And Councilmember Hoppe, maybe you want to talk about the details. It's really a kind of a well please.
Yeah. Well, I'll back up and say we staff had a really productive meeting last week in terms of the traffic calming, and it was well attended by a variety of people in the area. And so I think the resolution on the traffic calming and going in stages was really great. There was uniform concern about this approach to the parking situation. Right now, they were looking for something that was better than what they have, and this proposal is worse than what they have. Right now, they can stop for 20 minutes to drop off or pick up. If there are parking meters there, then they have to, the parents have to pay just to drop off or pick up their kids. And the goal was to find, to have some hanging tags so that volunteers, parents, usually could park for a longer period of time. I think staff in part came up with this because we don't have an ordinance right now for hanging tags. And there has been a request for that in the larger picture for residential areas too. So what I'd like to request, and I think uniformly the people in attendance and the Lee School would like to see a pilot program with the hang tags and work with the principal and the PTA president until we can get an ordinance that would provide for hang tags.
Do we need action for that, or can you? Are you empowered to do that?
I'm empowered to do that. Of course, I'd like to have consensus from all of you before I jump out there. But in this case, it makes a lot of sense. We are looking at this, you know, in a go-forward basis in other areas of town where, you know, we have severe parking issues. East Campus is an example. And so it seems like a nice way to get our feet wet, try it, kind of work out bugs in a one-block area versus a whole neighborhood.
So a motion to approve a three-month pilot using hang tags for volunteers at Lee School.
Right, and we'll look to the school to create the hang tags.
Right,
and we'll sketch it out in some agreement and come back.
I'm just wondering if, for simplicity's sake, the city attorney would let us count 90 business days, so you can just do one semester.
Sorry, I missed what
it was. Sort of a joke. Is if he could just do the
3 months
pilot for the semester instead of 90 days, it might make people's life easier.
The ordinance says 90 days.
Yeah, I think.
Oh, so we would. Well, we'll know within 89 days whether it's a success.
Yeah, we could come back too with some indication of if it's working and give you the chance to pass an ordinance that would establish it longer term.
So I make the motion.
Second. Yeah.
Any discussion on the motion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. 122-12 is an informational report on Murfreesboro Drive. I'll let staff comment on that.
Basically, it doesn't meet the warrants as set out by our policies for traffic calming. There is options for the neighborhood should they want to purchase a sign for kid-friendly signs, and we're willing to put those up.
Question, we had a request for Sexton and Hurth, and I don't know if you want to get into that at this point. Similar issue.
You know, I certainly don't want to interfere with what the police department does, but would this not be appropriate to have a motorcycle police officer show up for a couple days, over 2 weeks, just to let the neighbors know that we're watching for them? I mean, not that that requires any activity, but...
could certainly do that.
I mean, I think that would be good, be perceived as good customer service by the neighbors.
Could I follow up? Okay, so the 85th percentile was 34 miles per hour, and it would trigger traffic calming if it was one more mile per hour, right? 35 miles per hour. So it seems like they're right on the edge of really needing some traffic.
But it's a short block. If you know, you're 29 east of Younger, and then you drop down from there. So I mean, it's you're close to Grace Lane. Is when they're coming off Grace Lane, they're going pretty fast. But once they get into the neighborhood, they slow down. Grace Lane's more of a minor arterial, I believe.
So maybe we can do enforcement and then measure it again if it gets worse or it doesn't get better.
And now, could you, there was a part you said about doing the traffic calming. Was they're willing to pay for it?
Well, we can install kid-friendly speed limit sign as a reminder. You know, we do those if it's a greater than 1,000 ADT. Well, this is not, so they can purchase them if they want a reminder. Because that's one of the things that we did when we reduced it to 25. We took all the speed limit signs down that referenced a lot of things. So,
what are those signs
to save
cost?
Money?
$7.
Yeah, they're $77.
I mean, did they express an interest in paying?
I don't know that we've talked to them. You know, and I kind of agree with the mayor. We need probably a little better enforcement sometime. We can talk to Chief Burton to see if they can have a presence out there.
We could try it, but I mean, in general,
start with that.
In general, we like the idea, or at least some of us like the idea of traffic calming insofar as we can afford it. I'm just wondering what it would do to volunteer drive. That's probably something you'd want to take into account if you did proceed with traffic calming.
I'm seeing no consent. Is there a motion that anybody, is this, should we disregard this as informational and keep it open?
And, yeah, we'll certainly get
right.
Some
and
targeted
sure that,
enforcement.
We satisfy those folks. 123-12 is also informational. Has to do with closing my favorite garage, which, by the way, had 192 cars in it at 940 today.
But I'm getting a lot of money for those people that aren't there.
Well, sounds like you could get more money. sounds to me, I'm not telling you what to do.
I'm still like overselling.
Another revenue opportunity.
Double rhythm.
Any comments or questions about this? 124-12 is interdepartment transfer of funds request, which is informational. Comments? Questions? I'm going to open the floor to anybody in the public who wants to speak. I'll yield 3 minutes. Good evening.
I can't wait to be home for family day. I like the congratulations to me or is that bill, but I think you've all done a wonderful job making it work. And I thank you all.
Thank you, Kathleen. I hope you're congratulating me in a year. Anyone else? Council comments.
I will just start by thanking and congratulating all the groups that have done work in Douglas Park area and the CPD in particular, and I'm really appreciative of the Douglas Park Neighborhood Association and of the work they've done. So, and just wanted to mention that briefly. Stop there because I can't read my handwriting on the next. Oh, the parking tags. I think it is time. This is a good place to do an experiment because there's sort of an immediate need and demand, and it's a small area. But we may be reaching the size of city where we may want to look at residential or some other kind of parking restrictions in some neighborhoods. And you know, the grasslands might be an example. They haven't mentioned it, but people in Benton Stevens have mentioned it. So this would be an interesting place to do an experiment where there are people that are very interested. And I want to thank Councilperson Hoppe for following up on this issue. I know it's in my ward, and I was out of town when it started, so appreciate her following up.
I'd like to thank staff for the examples of the trash cans that are sitting out front in the lobby. I look forward to having them, reading the email that we got about bringing them around to the mall and the ARC and other places. I really look forward to getting them out where everybody can see them. So for everybody that's watching, we do have cans in the lobby of the City Hall. And thank you, staff, for bringing them in.
I just have a thank you also to the Parks and Rec Department. I noted a tree at Stevens Lake, that additional tree that looked like it may be dead, and it was surrounded by a lot of brush. But lo and behold, they cleared the brush, and they say the tree was alive, and they cut off a few limbs, and it looks really great. So thank you.
We passed a east side sidewalk construction project this evening. It's actually in Benton Stevens neighborhood. And I listened to Kurt Albert talk a couple of meetings ago. So I went over and toured Benton Stevens, and I can tell you there are no sidewalks on McAllister, Amelia, Gordon, Moss, Woodrow, Ann Street, or the east side of Melbourne Street. And we need to address those at some point in the future.
I have nothing.
I've got two things. One in regards to the Hinkson Creek. Ken Mikiff wrote a editorial, I think right after our last meeting, mentioned that there's signs on Flat Branch Creek about not having human contact with the water. Wanted to see if that would be an appropriate thing, if there's enough human traffic going by Hinkson Creek with the trail system, if that's something that we want to add, just to raise, well, for safety issues and to, you know, raise that as an issue, something that we want to address. Ken also ended with saying that he would never be able to, he won't live to see the Hinkson Creek cleaned up enough for human contact, and I'm taking that as a challenge. I am asking Ken to hold on. I'd like to see Ken be able to safely wade through the Hinkson Creek. I don't think that's an unreasonable thing and something we want to work towards, even though it's a large and non-direct issue. But we want to work towards that. My second issue is...
Can I?
Go ahead, Barb.
Can I just comment on that? Living on the Hinkson Creek, there are people that it's regularly used by kayakers when it's high, as well as neighbors going in it. So I would hate to see any signs saying that people can't go in it because they use it now. It's not that they swim in it or anything. They wade in it, and the kayakers know to not drink the water, but it's still, it's used, even though it needs to be improved, it's used by humans.
Yeah, well, usually the signage says what the risk is, not don't do
okay.
it. Don't do
That's
it sign.
My own, my, okay.
And it's a stopgap solution. The solution that I think we're all in agreement on, but just a matter of how we're going to get there is to clean it up. The second issue is that I want to raise is in regards to homelessness. I had the great pleasure of attending Project Homeless Connect. Councilperson Kestable also attended. It was a nice ordinance that I read on behalf of the mayor. It was a great event. The point in time count where they count how many unsheltered individuals came out is 182 folks that were unsheltered on that given day, July 25th, 2012, that we were able to identify. And some of that is we've gotten better at identifying where folks are, but homelessness continues to be an issue. What I'd really like to see is this winter that we can kind of take some proactive approach to have some kind of winter shelter. I think the armory might be, you know, the churches have tried together to do this kind of room at the inn where they've kind of banded together and provided the volunteer labor. But they, and I know the council addressed it before I was on council, but it was a heck of a time with, ended up being fire codes and very few folks being able to actually be sheltered. So if we could take kind of looking ahead that we know that that's going to be an issue this winter, if we could take a look and see if there's something that the city can do to increase our efforts for our most vulnerable citizens so that we don't have any exposure deaths and those sort of things. I think that would be a good thing.
Let me finish with a couple things. Do you have something else?
I have one more.
Go ahead.
I reviewed my water and sewer rates for my downtown building today, and I felt bad about having a master water meter and only paying one sewer bill. So I'm going to offer to the city, I have three tenants in my building, I will pay three sewer bills on this master water meter and challenge you all to figure out how to do that on the billing system. I'd like to challenge other business and building owners in Columbia to step up and do this. It's the right thing to do. We're underpaying our sewer bills because we're on a master water meter, and it's going to cost the residents money if we don't do something.
2 points. Number one, I asked the city councilor about a month ago to review the state ordinance which limits hotel occupancy tax to 5% when used for a convention center. Since in our ongoing negotiations we may have the opportunity to add more service, we will need a larger terminal. We have to figure out how to fund it. So in addition to the request I made about, which was, can we ask the citizens in a vote to increase the hotel occupancy tax to 7% to fund airport terminal infrastructure? That was one question. I'm going to add a corollary to that. Kansas City has a, I don't know whether it's 7 or 7.25% occupancy tax. They also have a room fee of about $1.70. So when you add both those together, in fact, Kansas City has an occupancy tax. It's really over 9%. So the other corollary I would ask the councilor is, could the citizens of Columbia impose a airport infrastructure development fee on hotel occupants? Would that be legal? And I'll await your response. Any other comments?
I would be willing to rent the airport for a party. I don't know if that would qualify it.
Meeting's adjourned.